Hello everyone, welcome to the GNSO Council sessions for the weekend. We'll start in about 5 minutes. If you could, those councillors that are in the room, if you could move to the table and take your seats, we'll try and start presently. Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. Welcome. I'll just give the meeting staff a few seconds to get the recording started, and once they give me the go-ahead, we'll start. Okay. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here. Welcome to San Francisco. I'd like to welcome those people that don't know ICANN or aren't used to ICANN as much as some of us are. Welcome to this kind of meeting. Welcome to our weekend sessions. No, that's not a mixtape. It's actually the GNSO Council's work for the weekend. We go over the issues that are before us at the moment, and we have a full schedule on both Saturday and the Sunday, which you can find out a little bit more about on the GNSO Council website, which is gnso.icann.org, or on the main ICANN site. And you have a link there to the San Francisco meeting. So welcome to you all. As usual, I think that's been done already, but I would like to ask that priority at the table be given to GNSO councillors, and if there's room, then, you know, and you do find a seat somewhere, please do make yourself comfortable at the table, but give councillors priority if you can. So to start off what promises to be an exciting week and certainly a full weekend for us, we will have a look at some of the working groups that the GNSO Council and the GNSO, currently has ongoing. The first of those is an update and a report from the PEDNA group, which is... I've got the wrong acronym. I know, I'm not reading the screen. That group there up on the screen, the IRTP Part B group, and we will now hear from Michele Nalon, who is the chair of this working group and who will provide us with an update. Michele.
Thanks, Stefan. Good morning, everybody. I'm Michele, chair of the IRTP Part B working group. For those of you who have been to the last few ICANN meetings, we've given updates in the past, whether it's on our interim report and then before that, our end kind of starting off session. Just go through this, and if anybody has any questions, if anything is unclear, please feel free to interrupt, because this is part of the reason why we do this. See if I can get this thing to work. Okay. So the IRTP, it's the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy. It's the ICANN policy which governs how domains are transferred between one ICANN-accredited registrar and another. Now, the key thing here is to remember this is between moving a domain from one registrar to another, not between registrants. It's a totally different concept. Straightforward process for registrants to transfer domain names between registrars. It's part of a series of five PDPs covering this area, and we started work in June 2009. We had an initial report back in May of last year with a public comments. We had 17 comments received. I was actually chatting to staff just to verify this. To date, with the two comment periods that we've had, we've only received comments from the registrars and the registries. We have not received comments from other stakeholder groups, and these would be appreciated, even if it was simply an acknowledgement of the fact that you don't have anything meaningful to say on the subject. But the silence has been quite deafening. We've reviewed the public comments and we've moved forward. I mean, that in our case, it has actually meant that based on the feedback we got, we actually did a complete about turn with respect to some of the things we were looking at. So now, moving forward, we're also getting in more community input. So the recommendations that we have, Charter question A. Actually, I thought, where are the charter questions? Rick, are they on the previous slide? Charter question A. The working group is considering recommending requiring registrars to provide an emergency action channel as described in the SSAC 007. The working group recognises there are further details that should need to be worked out. This emergency action channel could also be used for non-transfer abuse issues. Another recommendation, the working group recommends that registrar consider the measures to protect domain registrar accounts against compromise and misuse described in SACT 044, Section 5. We also are requesting an issues report on the requirement of thick whois for all incumbent GTLDs. We're recommending an issue report to examine the concept of change of control, including an investigation of how this function is currently achieved. What we mean here, change of control, is as into who controls the domain name. If there are any applicable models of the country code namespace and any associated security concerns. Next recommendation, recommend modifying Section 3 of the IRTP to require that the registrar of record / losing registrar be required to note...
Sorry.
Oh, an echo. What the hell? Be required to notify the registered name holder / registrant of the transfer out. At the moment, it's optional. Modification of denial reason number 6. For those of you who aren't that familiar with the current transfer policy, there are a number of specific reasons for which a registrar may deny a transfer. So this is what it's referring to, because there's lots of sixes which might cause confusion. Modification of denial reason number 6, so the language is expanded and clarified to tailor it more to explicitly address registrar-specific, i.e. non-EPP locks, in order to make it clear that the transfer contact, often the registrant, must give some sort of informed opt-in express consent. Actually, that's a really horrible sentence. I'll translate that into simpler English. It's basically so that the registrant is making a more conscious decision about the locks that may be applied to the domain, in simple terms. You have to excuse the language there, but we have to be fairly precise, so we end up with rather an unworkable sentence, but that's more for the legal people sitting in the room. Number 7, if a review of the UDRP is conducted in the near future, the issue of requiring the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings is taken into consideration. A couple of people found this idea a little bit confusing. It's just at the moment there is what happens out there and then there's what's actually mandated in policy, and the policy isn't that clear. Recommendation number 8, the working group recommends standardising and clarifying who is status messages regarding registrar lock statuses. And on charter question E, the working group recommends deleting denial reason number 7 as a valid reason for denial under section 3 of the IRTP, as it is technically not possible to initiate a transfer for a domain name that is locked and hence cannot be denied, making this denial reason obsolete. Instead, denial reason number 7 should be replaced by adding a new provision in a different section of the IRTP on when and how domains may be locked or unlocked. We currently have a comment period open on this, and we would really like to get some feedback from the community, specifically from the stakeholder groups that didn't provide any feedback so far. Would be nice. And then we will hopefully finalise everything and wrap this up. And if you want more information, there's plenty of it available on the various parts of the ICANN website. And there's several members of the working group are also here in the room, and would like to take this opportunity just to thank the work of the other members of the working group and the fantastic support of the ICANN policy staff, in particular Marika. Thanks. If anybody has any questions.
Thanks, McKinney. And if there are questions, Jeff.
Thanks, thanks, Michele. Quick question on, I think it's recommendation number 3, which is the requirement of a thick whois for all registries, I think it's...
No, that's not the recommendation. The recommendation is an issues report.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, we had originally suggested something stronger, but we know that there are... potentially landmines. So an issues report, in other words, let's have a look into this, because one of the areas that we feel is causing issues is the inconsistency between the WHOIS status, WHOIS output, between thick and thin.
Right. So, and actually, thanks. That's so my question wasn't so much on that outcome, but on the notion of, at this point in time, I think there's only one registry, maybe has several TLDs that it manages. Maybe two registries. I think it's the ComNet and Jobs registries that are the only thin ones currently. And one of the themes we're going to hear a lot this weekend is the resources and what we can actually do PDPs on, and trying to reduce staff load and trying to manage all of those resources. And I was wondering if anyone, and I don't mean to put anyone on the spot, but since it really would be directed towards one registry operator, it's something we need to consider as far as whether to initiate a PDP on something that only affects one registry operator. And maybe that could be best achieved by talking to that registry operator and see if this is something they are willing to entertain or able to entertain, as opposed to going through an issues report, a full PDP, using up a lot of resources when it really affects. Granted, it's the largest two TLDs, but it's still, you know, one registry operator. So I wanted to hear people's thoughts on that, as opposed to going through a full-fledged PDP. Because if it's something that, and again, I haven't talked to that registry, and I don't know if anyone has, but if they're willing to do it on their own, they wouldn't necessarily need to be a PDP.
Just before I leave that open to other people, I mean, it's not simply a question of just talking to VeriSign in that respect. You also have to take into account that if VeriSign were to have thick WHOIS, then that means that the registrars would lose a certain degree of control, possibly. I mean, there could be other areas with that. It's not just simply a question of registry X, which in this case is VeriSign, do Y.
Well, right, I understand. So, but that's, I mean, if VeriSign said, yeah, we can see doing that in the next few years or whenever, and then have a discussion directly with the registrars, there wouldn't need to be a PDP. And what I'm just trying to do is there's, and if you look at the rest of your report, it's well done. There's a lot of areas where it's an issues report, PDP, or more work needs to be done on clarifying this. It seems like there's going to be a lot of work that comes out of this, work that should be done. I'm just trying to figure out how we as a group can reduce that workload. So if a PDP doesn't need to be done because the registry says they'll do it, and then talks to the registrars about how best to do it, that might be a better outcome.
Go ahead, Stefan, if you
would. I was going to say, do you want to get... There's a queue, so...
If I can just ask everyone to mute their computers, because the echo is actually caused by audio that's coming from, or the feedback from the audio on people's computers. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Marika. So I have Tim next. Okay. Christina, and then Marika and Wendy.
Thanks. Michele, I had two questions about the recommendations. The first is, are they listed in priority order based on view of the working group? In other words, was the working group's number one recommendation ranked number one?
No, the working group had a number of questions that we had to address, so the recommendations are to address...
And the order corresponds to
the actual questions. It's not a question of we really want this and this is a secondary, et cetera, et cetera. It's nothing like that. It's like we had a number of questions that we were asked to look at. We have attempted to address all of those questions, and we have a number of recommendations which slot in with those questions. But as it's IRTP, unfortunately, it's not as easy at times to kind of clearly demarcate, question A versus question B.
All right. Just on a follow-up on that, and just picking up on the point that Jeff alluded to, namely prioritization, if that was something that the council were to request the working group to do to try and facilitate our ability to do that, do you think that's something the working group could do?
I think it's something we'd have to discuss, but I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be able to.
Okay.
I mean, that's me personally, but I would ask the other people within the group who've put in their time for this too. But I personally don't see an issue with that.
All right. And then finally, the last question is, What I wasn't clear on, and I don't know to what extent we've kind of formally adopted the method of identifying the level of support for particular recommendations, but are there any recommendations that are in the final report that had less than kind of full consensus support from the working group?
No.
Okay.
We'd be perfectly frank, just so that it is quite clear, and unless somebody decides now to do an about turn on me and embarrass me publicly, which would be fun and would make the Saturday morning a lot more interesting. All of the recommendations.
Can I do that?
You're going to do that anyway, Stefan. All of our recommendations are fully supported by all members of the working group. We didn't have to get into any debate, discussion, or anything about, you know, various levels of support. So we didn't even bother mentioning it because it was totally moot.
Actually suggest that once the report is finalized, that there be some indication of that, both in terms of, you know, if we do decide to request ranking, or rather if we don't, to have that clear in the report. Because my initial reaction when I read this was, oh, well, these must be in the order of priority.
Yeah, thanks to you both. That's very useful. Marika.
This is Marika. So to Jeff's question on the request for an issue report on ThQuiz, the language that's in the presentation is just an abbreviated version. If you read the whole recommendation, you'll see as well that I think the intention from the working group asking for that issues report is also to look at all the aspects of requiring ThQuiz. It's not just that the working group thinks that it might be a good idea. They want to know as well, are there any negative consequences? Are there any reasons why it shouldn't be done? Get as well broader input from the community on that question. And I see your point saying, of course, it's easier to just have that direct discussion, but I think that was a bit the thinking of going down the issue report route to make sure that all consequences are taken into account before, you know, a possible requirement is made to have ThQuiz for all registries.
I'm going to peer over at Stefan's list. It looks like Wendy's next.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks, Michaela. I wondered whether the group had heard from registrants in different sorts of use cases around the domain hijacking. Users of commercial domains, users in situations of human rights or protest, political cases might have different interests around or concerns around the domain hijacking.
Well, the short answer would be no. The longer answer would be that as a result, based on the feedback we received from our initial report, we tried. And the problem here we had was trying to kind of balance this sanely so that it wasn't a case of as if we were preferring a particular user grouping usage scenario. I don't know what the best way of wording this is diplomatically. We did try to get some feedback from specific types of users. We also were trying to work on the basis of fact-based policy development as opposed to he said that she said that something happened type stuff. But I mean, to talk to your query specifically, no, because it's not really, while I'm sure that there are cases of these things, but there are potentially cases, the hijack thing is more to do with somebody hacking into an account and taking control of a domain. It wouldn't be specific to the actual usage of the domain.
Thanks, and I appreciate the interest in fact-based decision-making, and part of my question is whether it would be helpful in the remaining comments to add any facts around non-commercial uses and users.
Well, the reality is that this, in terms of hijacking and all this, we don't have a huge number of hard statistics to go by. We have some of the larger registrars who have dealing with larger volumes of domain names and who have put in place certain things to prevent issues of fraud, of hijack and everything else, who have been able to share some of their experiences, but it's not exactly something that you can track as easily as, say, oh, I don't know, the number of net ads for a particular TLD or something like that, which is nice and binary and clear. The other thing is with respect to, say, the usage and everything else, you're always going to hear from those people who feel that they are the most impacted or who are going to be the most harmed. So it's like with the commons. We've received commons from people who care a lot, but we haven't received commons from people who might think that the current status quo is perfectly okay. And the fact that they haven't given us that means that we don't actually know that they're okay with it or not. They've been incredibly silent.
Thanks. So I have Chuck, Jeff, James, and Alan. Chuck.
Thanks, Stefan, and thanks, Michaela, and all of the working group. You've been working at this a long time, and it's a good product. I think you're going to be the council's going to be talking about one issue over and over again all day as you look at work to be done, and that's priorities and how do you get the resources and so forth. And I'd like to encourage all of the stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as the council, to consider focusing on the budget framework. If you look at that budget framework out there, and it's actually trending upward instead of downward, and in terms of the GNSO registrant fee contributions to the budget, it's over 94% in the current budget framework. And I think it's a real shame that things like the transfer policy that has been, we're years behind when we should have done the review, and the reason is because we have to spread things out and take it serially in order to make it realistic in terms of workload. But I think it's a shame that when over 94% of ICANN's revenue is coming from fees that ultimately come from GNSO registrants, that we have to have a shortage of resources. I'm not saying that the GNSO fees shouldn't help subsidize everything else that ICANN does, which is the current state. But I am saying that I think we should all be concerned that we have a resource shortage. And I'm not demeaning at all efforts to be efficient. If we don't need a PDP to get, let's be as efficient as possible. Let's prioritize things and everything. But I think we all should also take another tack, and that is to recognize that, hey, we should quit complaining about GNSO, limited GNSO resources, when over 95% of ICANN's revenue comes from the GNSO side of the house.
Chuck, please stay seated there, because I think the point you've just made will probably ask for, probably people will want to come back to it. I think it's a very important point. Obviously, Jeff has already alluded to it. We all know that it's something that we've been discussing with the staff and amongst ourselves. It's certainly something that we will be coming back to over the weekend, the resource issue, the prioritization issue. And maybe we can discuss it during one of our sessions today, just to remind people that from 12 till 1, we have a session where we have planned to discuss various things, including the potential motions that we'll look at on Wednesday during our open council meeting. And that time may also be served just to air some of those issues out. So maybe we can do that then, or we can pick up on points as we go along. But I do think that is a crucial issue facing us, and it's something that we need to have a discussion on. So, Chuck, thanks very much for making that point. Jeff.
Yeah, just getting back to something that Marika had said in the report about talking about Thick Who Is, and from my, this is again personal viewpoint, haven't talked to the registries about this, but a PDP at this point in time on Thick Who is, the train's already kind of left the station. It's already a requirement for all new GTLDs, so it's not something. Thick Who is what's happening. It's what's going to be in place for every new TLD. It's in place for every existing TLD except for ComNet and jobs, I think. So my only point is that if you have, and again, I haven't talked to the registry at all, but if you have a registry that's willing and able to do it, and you have discussions that go on between the registry and registrars to figure out any issues, that would save us all a PDP that we just don't have to do. If there's really an interest in doing a PDP on Thick Who Is to study whether it's been a good thing or a bad thing, wait a few years till after new GTLDs are implemented, and we can get a real good statistical study and data. But at this point in time, again, personally, it's not something that I would be in favor of.
Thanks. I think this is really good, the discussion that we're starting to have now. I'm sorry that it's maybe intruding on the stuff that you wanted to discuss, Michele, but these weekend sessions, perhaps they're slightly less scripted, and they do allow us to just go off into certain directions that we need to discuss and take the opportunity that we are seeing each other face-to-face to have these discussions. So I would encourage, you know, other councillors and other groups to jump in if they want to pick up this discussion, and maybe it's not directly related to the working group that Michele chairs, but we will accommodate that if we can. James, you were next.
Thanks, Stefan.
Just say who you are.
James Bladell from GoDaddy, member of the working group, and I think when I raised my hand, it was topic A, but I think that topic B is kind of spilled over into it, so if I could comment on that really quickly. Hopefully this group would appreciate that we are, you know, at the working group level, trying to be agnostic as to budgetary concerns and prioritization when it comes to deciding these policy issues. I mean, certainly we wouldn't want to say this is a good idea for a policy or this is something that is causing a lot of harm and needs to be fixed, but we know it's not in the budget. I mean, I think that, you know, deferring those decisions to this level is probably, I would assume, what you want us to do. Please correct me if that's not the case. Maybe the prioritization that you were talking about, Christine, is the best approach to that, and then just kind of leave those decisions to the next level. But to touch on something that Michele was speaking on earlier in response to Wendy's question, we really focused a lot on the hijacking issue, and some of us, I think, were concerned that we were spending too much time on that to the detriment of some of our other charter questions, and that we really emphasize the mechanics of hijacking and not necessarily the impact, and treating all hijackings, whether it was a, you know, Alexa top 10 domain name, or whether it was, you know, my grandmother's recipe blog or something, as having normalized equivalent impact to that particular person. But you know, I think if there's something that we're missing with that, with respect to the differing impacts for I think you were mentioning political speech and things like that, then we definitely need to get that into the comments, because it's not something that we considered at all. So, thanks.
Thanks, James. Alan's next.
Thank you. Alan Greenberg. A few quick comments, again, probably not on the PDP itself, but Michele made a comment early on that in the previous report they received a bunch of comments and made a lot of changes because of them, but didn't receive comments from a lot of people. The tendency, I think, in these comment periods is if you wholeheartedly support what's going on, you just don't say anything. And there's a real danger that the people who are vocal get things changed, whereas that people who are completely happy with the report lose what they're seeing out of it. And somehow we have to get that message across. You know, the only reason to comment is not because you want to see changes. If you're happy with it, you probably need to say so in some way, and probably some strong way, because a weak, yeah, okay, is not likely to offset the negatives that come out very vociferously. And I think it's a real failing of the comment of the process. And the other comment with regard to Chuck's balancing of where the money comes from and money spent on GNSO, I think, is a very valid statement. However, when we talk about prioritization, we often talk about the prioritization as it affects the stakeholder groups and the various constituencies. And I've said before, and I'll say again, I think that to some extent is a red herring. When I look around this table, there's less than a half a dozen people who I see on working group after working group. And in all of these working groups, we tend to have virtually no representation from some of the stakeholder groups and some of the constituencies. We lost something when we went away from task forces, where there was required balanced representation, in that people are just opting out completely and walking away from these things. And I think we need to fix that somehow. Thank you.
Well, so we've just had a process, for those who aren't clear on this, and the GNSO is still going through it, called restructure, which has made us move from what Alan was describing to the model we have today. And that's perhaps another topic that we may want to try and touch on over the weekend if we have time, because it seems that some of the results that we have from that process aren't to everybody's satisfaction. And I see a few people nodding around the table. So, you know, if you do want to pick up that topic at some point and open that discussion. Perhaps that's something that would be useful. And I also think the resource issue isn't necessarily linked to how many people are on the working group in a direct way. It may be, but don't forget that the resource issue is also one that the volunteers find themselves dealing with. We all have, well, most of us have day jobs, and it is very difficult to stay involved at the level that is required to participate actively on these working groups. So I think we also have to be mindful of that and not, you know, make people feel guilty that they're not getting involved in all the working groups. It is difficult to keep up with all this stuff. Mikey.
How about this one? Ah, that works better. This is Mikey O'Connor, member of the business constituency and curmudgeon emeritus of the O'Connor Company of St. Paul. I was on the working group as well, and I wanted to amplify something that Chuck said. The recommendation about the whole issue of urgent return is 6 years old. The ESSAC report that we reference in this document was written 6 years ago. And we're on IRTPB. There are five total IRTP chunks in this queue. And 6 years after ESSAC wrote the report, we're finally probably two-thirds of the way through the second of five PDPs. So the resource problem and the scheduling problem and the growing backlog of policy issues is a problem that's not going to get better anytime soon unless we do something about it. That's all.
Thanks, Mikey. Tim, can I've actually just, sorry, realized that we've run over time. I thought it was an hour for this, and it's half an hour. So, Tim, can I ask you to close comments on this, and then we'll move on to the next topic?
I just wanted to agree with Mikey. I think that, and I'm not suggesting we table the rest of the transfer PDPs, although I wouldn't be opposed to talking about it at this point either. I mean, we're coming up to a situation where, well, we think it won't be long, but it might be another year yet. We could have, you know, dozens of hundreds of new GTLDs, and all the transfer issues that we're facing today may be nothing compared to some of the things that might crop up when we have that many GTLDs. So I think, you know, when things go on too long, we have to rethink what we have on the table, and either maybe something needs to be refreshed, or maybe we have to rethink whether it's something we should be pursuing based on current changes. But one way or the other, I think we shouldn't get to that point. Somehow we should figure out how we can handle our workload in a timely manner.
Thanks, Tim. Okay, so we'll move on. I'll just ask Michele if you have any closing remarks, and then we'll move on to the next topic, which is PEDNA this time. And Alan will be giving us an update there. Thanks.
Thanks, Stefan. Just in closing, if anybody has any questions, queries, or needs any clarifications on anything to do with the working group, there's a load of us here. There's myself, and there's a bunch of others down that end of the room. We have a common period open at the moment. We really do need comments. Al and I appreciate exactly what you were saying. It's very, very true. Some of stakeholder groups have been noticeable in their total lack of comments, and it would be appreciated if they just gave us something just to say, yeah, it's okay. We don't have a problem with this. Or, no, it's not. We think it's terrible. But there's something, please, because the silence is deafening and it's not very helpful. The last thing we want is to have spent, you know, the thick end of 2 years working through this, and for then people to turn around at the end and go, oh, you've changed all the policy and it sucks and we hate you. Because we're going to go, look, you know, you've got the opportunity to give us some feedback. Please do. Thanks.
Thank you very much. So We'll move on to the post-expiration domain name recovery, or PEDNA, which is on its final report, and we will have a presentation. I think you have to move up to where Michele was, and we'll have a presentation from Alan Greenberg. Jonathan.
Hi, it's Jonathan Robinson. I just thought a quick placeholder comment while Alan sets up. It strikes me that one opportunity here might be... there may be an opportunity for in any comment period to put a multi-stakeholder placeholder in at the head of the comment period, because what we tend to do is just leave a big open space and whoever comes in gets to comment. And if it could be seen that there was almost a some form of bucket or opportunity, it would almost, I wouldn't like to use the word embarrass people, but show that there would be nothing put in that from a particular stakeholder group, and at least create the, I don't know, I don't have a fully formed suggestion, but it occurs to me if there were a set of opportunities, some way in which it could be shown that there was no comment from various areas rather than simply an opportunity for active comment. So I'm sorry if that's a little bit of a rambling suggestion, but I'm wondering if there isn't a way of leaving some assigned to people to comment where there's a lack of comment from different groups.
Thanks. Alan, please go ahead, and sorry for keeping you waiting.
That's okay. I plan to go through all the whole coffee period. All right, thank you. Won't spend a lot of time on background, and I'll be giving the presentation. If we go into questions, I've got a number of people from the working group around the table or in the room, and I welcome any of them just speaking up if they feel they want to address any questions. The PDP was initiated just about the same time as the RRTP one was. Our initial report did not have any particular recommendations in it, but tried to outline the situation at the time, addressing the five questions that were posed in the charter. We got a fair number of comments, and including a public survey we did, which I think helped a lot in trying to understand where we needed to go with the final report. The draft final report we have published is almost complete. It was a real struggle getting it out in time for the publication deadline for this meeting. And there are a number of things that we knew needed to be cleaned up, and I'll identify some of them as we go along, that we just didn't have time for. So there will be some adjustments, partly because we just ran out of time in talking through some of the issues. We came right down to the wire on a couple of the critical issues where the substantive recommendation was not made until just before publication deadline. The comment period is open until April 7th. And we would appreciate comments from all parties. As with the other, with Michele's task force, or working group rather, the participation in our working group was not particularly balanced, and we would like to see input from the comments, in any case, from the whole community. I think these recommendations fall under the category of compromise. I don't think anyone on the working group is ecstatic over what we see here, but perhaps there's an equal amount of pain and dissatisfaction, which is maybe as much as we can hope in this kind of process. We believe that we have achieved three major targets in what we are recommending. Number one, we are providing additional guarantees to registrants regarding post-expiration renewal. We are making a number of suggestions which should hopefully improve or attempt to improve registration, education, and comprehension, because lack of that is is clearly one of the problems. And we have tried to make recommendations which, although they will help the registrants, are pretty much in line with current registrar practices and should have a minimal impact on many of the stakeholders in the process. When we started, we were always talking about trying to fix problems with outliers, not necessarily inherent problems in the whole industry. We have 14 recommendations. The first one sounds like a funny recommendation, but specifically we are trying to define who it is that is allowed to renew after expiration, because according to the RAA, it is far from clear. And we are defining that as essentially the person who was eligible to renew just before expiration. The wording gets a little bit more complex because of some legal technicalities. The second recommendation says there will be a minimum of 8 days after expiration where the domain is no longer functioning the way it did normally. That doesn't mean there is only 8 days, but there's a minimum of 8 days. Recommendation three says changes to who is after expiration do not alter the rights of the registrant. And there has been some confusion up until now that a change in the who is, which is allowed under registration agreements, might actually impact the ability of a registrant to do something. Four and five take the redemption grace period and institutionalize it as a consensus policy, something that we are told the originators of the RGP many, many years ago presumed would happen, but the process was never carried out to make it happen. It's particularly important now with new GTLDs because it is not part of the applicant guidebook and therefore will not likely be implemented by new GTLDs if it isn't fixed one way or another. Number six is that the price of renewal after expiration must be posted. The EDD, it sounds obvious, the EDDP implemented in 2004 said that the RGP price must be posted, but it never said anything about regular expiration. Seven and eight are somewhat linked. They both are associated with making information available to registrants on the ICANN website so that registrants have a chance to understand what the process is, what they need to do, what their responsibilities are. The two started off as two very different recommendations. As the wording evolved, they sort of merged together, and they need to be reworded in the final version. Nine says that the registration agreement or associated documentation must tell the registrant ahead of time how communications will be made. It's an interesting situation where we tell registrants you better follow the notifications and renew on time, but we don't tell them ahead of time whether we're going to use Pony Express or email or whatever to do the notifications. 10 and 12 have to do with notification prior to expiration and after expiration. The current RAA requires two notices but says it in a very obscure way. We're trying to say it clearer, and we're adding the concept of one notification after expiration. Eleven is that the notifications must be done in ways which don't require explicit action on behalf of the registrant. Right now, there are cases where the only notification is done on the domain management system at the registrar, which requires logging onto it to look for the messages, which is not something a typical small registrant occasional registrant will do. Oops, sorry, wrong direction. Thirteen is that if a registrar redirects the website after expiration, that website, that splash page must give some indication this is an expired website and tell the registrant what to do. You know, click here to renew or send email or call a certain number or whatever. So if it's a parked page of some sort, it must indicate in some way that this is an expired name. And 14 is not a requirement, not a policy, but a recommendation for best practice. As we were discussing the notification issue, if a registrar sends messages after expiration, if the email address used is the domain in question, which has been suspended, essentially, the message won't go out. So the registrar is sending out messages which, if one were to look at them, you would say there's no way it can possibly get to the registrant. And we are suggesting that actions be taken to minimize the chance of that happening. We understand there's some complexities in it, and we're not recommending it be a consensus policy, however. As I said, the comment period is open until early April. And we would like to hear from people of all ilks. The participation in the working group, as I alluded to in my earlier comment, has not been particularly great from some areas, and we want to make sure that these people who will be affected by the results do have an opportunity to comment and tell us that they either think the direction we're going in is right, or if it's wrong, tell us which direction we should be going in. That's it. I do have some other slides on recommendation by recommendation, which I may pull up if there's particular questions, but that's the formal presentation. I would like to thank the people who we have had on the working group. It's been going on for a long time. The participation from a number of key people has been very good and very solid, at the top of which, of course, is Marika. And I don't think we would have gotten this far without her. But we have had good participation from a few areas within ICANN, and I appreciate that.
Thanks very much, Adam. We'll take a cue. Jeff, Jamie, anyone else? Just Jonathan, just please raise your hand, and I'll add you to the cue. Jeff.
Thanks, Alan. I have a question on recommendation number 2, and maybe you have an extra slide, because I think that, at least from a registry perspective, that seems like one of the biggest ones that would affect at least us. And I'm not sure I understood. The recommendation is to have 8 consecutive days, and I'm not sure where, if you could help us understand where 8 came from, as opposed to, you know, the 5, there's a 5, lots of things are defined already in 5-day terms, and we just came up with 8. But the main question I have is I'm looking at the paragraph after the recommendation, which says, actually not up there, but in the report, notwithstanding, the registrar may delete the domain at any time during the auto-renew grace period. And maybe one thing that might help when you take all these comments is to do a timeline, like a registration lifecycle timeline, so we can kind of see where these recommendations fit in. Because I'm getting confused, you know, and I know this very well. I'm getting confused as to where the recommendations fit in with auto-renew grace period, redemption grace period, and then also this new 8-day period for the registered name holder at expiration. So that might help.
If there's any other work group members who are foolish enough to want to tackle this, you may. I see no hands. Okay, where did the 8-day come from? I talked about compromise initially. There are those of us who went into this wanting it to be 0 and others who wanted it to be 30. And for reasons I won't go into the details of, we ended up at 8. I don't think there is anything here which is going to require a change on the from the registry point of view, number one, because you started off with the impact on registries. I may be wrong, but I don't believe so. So all this is saying is there must be a period of 8 days during which the domain is still renewable, because under current registration agreements, the domain may not be renewable at all. There may be 0 guaranteed. No large registrars give 0 days, but they're not required to give any.
Sorry, that's 8 days during the redemption grace period? I'm just trying to get this all in my head.
It's all during what is currently called the auto-renew grace period, the 45-day period.
Okay, so it's the first 8 days of the auto-renew.
No, period. Not the first 8. It could be the last 8 days of the 45. You know, for instance, if a registrar wants to follow their current practice and give 30 days or 40 days for the registrant to renew, these would be the last 8 days of those that the policy is talking about. Many registrars redirect the website and redirect other traffic immediately after expiration and leave it there for 40 days, that's completely compliant with this recommendation. They don't have to do anything.
Okay, so just, sorry, one quick follow-up on that. I know Jamie's got a comment, sorry. This is all meant to be done by the registrar. I mean, it doesn't say it in the recommendation, but it would be nice if it were clear to say that the registrar must interrupt the, what does it say, the original DNS resolution path must be interrupted. It should say, I'm hoping, by the registrar as opposed to the registry. That's what I'm just trying to figure out what the registry impacts are. So that's...
I noticed Marika writing, so I think that we can say noted. You're right, it should. The only impact, I believe, in any of these recommendations on registries is the one about RGP for those who don't already do it, I believe.
Okay. Can I move to Jamie, please?
Alan? Jamie here. I have a... could you put the recommendation number 14 on the screen? I understood that this is not a recommendation that had the full agreement in the working group. Yes, or?
I think there was general agreement that it would be a good thing, but we're not convinced that everyone can do it for a number of operational reasons. Yeah. I don't want to speak on behalf of other people. I don't think anyone thought it was a bad thing. How implementable it was is a different question.
Because as I understand, and maybe I understood it wrongly, but how if I send a notice to a domain that is expired, and maybe the guy will not receive this. So it's like a catch 22, and I send a notice for him to renew that he is he's bound not to receive. So I think it's easy in the registration agreement to demand the registrant to provide another way of reaching him besides the normal and email address attached to the domain name that is being registered. So it would be something that would affect the registration agreement between registrant and registrar.
We talked, I won't say ad infinitum, but a lot about whether we should require that the registrar, in a situation such as this, for instance, that if you've registered the domain, weston.com, and you said all contact, all the admin and billing contacts and whatever should go to me at weston.com, weston.com expires, it is disabled, and the registrar may still send the messages to me at weston.com, even though it's disabled. That's the situation we're talking about. We talked about whether we should require registrars to use some other means, Pony Express, telephone, whatever. We could not reach agreement on how we could do this in a way which could be done reasonably without potentially putting large costs on registrars who have business models that don't allow for that. So it ended up not being a recommendation. If you feel strongly that there should be such a recommendation, that's what comment periods are for. We could not reach closure within our own discussions on that. As you see by the best practice indication here, we could not even reach closure on the simpler one, potentially simpler one, of a registrar who's going to send a message to me at weston.com after they have disabled weston.com should do something different. It's been a difficult process, and we're trying to not make rules that will be very, very difficult or impossible for some registrars to implement. But if you think we weren't strong enough here, that's what the comment period is for. Make sure it gets said. Thank you.
I will.
Thanks, Jamie. Jonathan's next.
Thanks, Stefan. It's Jonathan Robinson. I think I have a quick question and a quick comment, because I know we're short of time, on recommendations 7 and 8, Alan. Question here really relates to the fact that these require ICANN to develop content to underpin these two recommendations. And I wondered, my question really is that something which has precedent? Is it common that ICANN would provide content to end users or registrants, or is this a departure or something unusual? That's the question. And the second, the comment really is, in 7 you make it a requirement that the link is from the registrar, but not so in 8. And my suggestion would be that most registrants are more familiar with the registrar than ICANN. In fact, many may not even know of the existence of ICANN. So even if it is usual or anticipated that ICANN would develop such material, it may be lost if it's not referred to by the registrars. Thank you.
Alan, do you want to?
James?
Thanks. James Bladel speaking. We had extensive discussions about this recommendation within the working group, and I think that the key concept that we arrived at was that it was necessary, and that registrars should not necessarily be leading this effort, because if given the opportunity to educate registrants, I'm going to educate them to be the best possible GoDaddy customers I can think of. And of course, many have seen our educational videos during the Super Bowl. But we arrived at the idea that this would be something that we would link to, something that we would help contribute to. We would certainly fact check it, and we would make sure that our customers were aware of it, but it really should be developed by ICANN and possibly other groups such as the ALAC.
I have a comment, but Marika has one first.
No, hang on. There's a queue. All right.
I just wanted to briefly respond to Jonathan's question, because what we have recently done on the request actually of the IRTP working group is develop educational materials on EPP status values, where ICANN took the lead, developed a draft, shared it with the working group, got input, got that back, and that should be shortly posted on the ICANN website. So that might serve as a kind of model where we try to develop something very neutral, share that with a group of people to say, do you think this works, and then post it somewhere on the ICANN website where we think people might check or look for that kind of information, and hopefully encourage as well others that have websites that provide that kind of information to link to it. Or so I think that would be something similar that the group is envisioning here.
In terms of precedent, there is one. The last version of the RAA required registrars to point to a rights and responsibilities document, which was developed by ICANN, and that's already there. So we're following on precedent that is there.
Okay, thanks. I've got Christina and Tim next. I'll close the queue off after Tim. We're already over time. Apologize for that. Christina.
I guess, Alan, the first question I wanted to ask you was the same one that I posed to Michaeli, namely, do the recommendations in the report, is recommendation number one the highest ranked in terms of order of priority based on the working group? And similarly, do you anticipate that the final report will indicate for each recommendation the level of support in the working group?
The level of support, yes. We would have done it in this report if we hadn't run out of time. At this point, I can't say there is complete support, but there have been no objections from any of the active members of the working group. There was one objection from an inactive member of the working group at the end, but that is all. So at this point, we think we have general support, but we haven't actually measured it. In terms of priority, no. The recommendations are ordered by the charter point number, by the charter questions. We have talked about whether we should order them by the charter questions or order them so they're at least grouped together, because, for instance, recommendation number 2 and recommendation number 9 or something really are linked together, but they were answering different questions. And we need to debate the order. There is no priority in that they're not something that are going to require graduated resources. We're expecting them to be all implemented.
And just a quick follow-up question. When in recommendation 7 and 8, because this is where I got a little confused, especially since I had just read the IRTP report, when you're talking about materials for registrants to avoid loss, you're not talking about loss in the context of the ESSAC report that already covers that from a hijacking perspective. You're talking about kind of renewal and expiration, yeah?
We're talking about finding out that you didn't renew prior to expiration and now it's too late, someone else has taken it over. Okay. Because registration agreements do allow that to happen right now.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that you all weren't reinventing the wheel. So I'm okay.
It's the same net result. You don't have the domain you thought you want that you wanted and okay. thought you would be able to keep, but completely different process.
Thanks. Tim.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on recommendation 14, because I know Jamie had some concerns with that, and others might as well. But one thing I just wanted to point out, and why I think maybe a best practice on that particular issue is best, is that one of the recommendations, I don't remember which number it is, actually now requires that at least two of the notices for expiration be sent prior to expiration. So that email address should be active and still usable at that point. In fact, I think today you find probably, I would say the majority, but certainly a significant number of registrars who already send multiple notices prior to expiration. So if they're not responding to that email address, many of them take a number of different steps even after expiration. So the other issue I would have with doing more than best practice at this point is that, is making sure we have solid evidence that it's really a significant factor in why domain names are not renewed. And I think if you talk to registrars, you'll find that they, at least I believe that it's probably not a significant factor. So we just want to be sure before we confirm policy that would require a lot of changes, because keep in mind there's tens of millions of domain name registrations already out there that we'd have to go back to and try to get that information so that when those names expired, we'd have it on file. So that is not a simple process. So before we do that, let's just make sure that there is a problem. So a best practice, then we can look at how things move going forward with the rest of the recommendations and something we could revisit down the road.
Thanks. I think we can all agree that these are useful discussions. I just want to ask you guys if you want to carry on just for a bit. I have two other people that potentially were in the queue. Would it be okay if we just go over a little bit? I think these working group discussions are very useful for us, and they're useful in many ways, especially as we look to prioritize. So is everyone okay? Hearing no dissent. We had Jonathan and Jamie next.
Hi, it's Jonathan. Just a brief follow-on comment from my previous one. I fully appreciate James's point that, many, many users out there choose to recognize GoDaddy as a major provider of domain name services and may not know about ICANN, yet ICANN is in a very good position to develop objective and neutral materials, particularly if helped by registrars. So I can see that the value in the materials, and in fact, Ching helpfully pointed out to me a beginner's guide or learner's guide to domain names that's I hope I'm not being disingenuous here, but apparently buried within the ICANN website. So it strikes me that there's a role for this sort of thing, but the question is, how does it get out to end users to make it of real value? And it seems to me there's two ways in which it's done, either in the form in which it was suggested in the recommendations, that is to say, it's either mandatory or best practice for it to be linked to via the registrar's website. And second, ICANN might like to think about in some way syndicating or getting that content published and out via other means other than hoping that it could be recognized as an end-user brand, which it clearly, in my view, is not. Thank you very much.
Do you have...
I think the two answers are noted, and... The reason we were talking about ICANN developing and posting on their website, but then being pointed to by the registrars, so whoever your registrar of favor is, they will be pointing to it. So, they may or may not notice that the ICANN brand when they get there, but hopefully there will be an obvious link to it from the site that they are comfortable in using. So we understood that posting in an obscure place on the ICANN website is not going to solve our problems.
Thanks, Jamie.
Excuse me, but my intervention has nothing to do with that. But it follows two of Christina's interventions. So I would like to point that Christina is demanding always that the working groups put their reports in the prioritized manner. And I think it's a good idea to delegate our prioritization effort to the working groups. And she is putting this very slowly, and I like the idea. So I would propose that the next working groups do this work this way, and their reports follow some severeness prioritization.
Thanks.
I've already told Christina I want to talk to her privately about this because I don't quite understand. We're talking about issues which are not going to require GNSO activity in WorkAft once this report, the final report, is approved. So I'm not sure the need to prioritize the individual recommendations which will fall upon ICANN staff to implement.
But it may also be just a need to make the reports more readable and to understand how the working group rates the results that it's coming out with. That can be, even if we're not expected as a council to take action, I think that might, you know, have some use.
Kind of, I think there is a good example. Mike's report on the low-hanging fruits, and this is some kind of priority. And the other would be the severeness, or how the it may affect all the community. And I think both aspects should be contemplated.
I think there is an answer that's really necessary here. What you see here are the recommendations that we managed to agree on. And if we got that far, there was a strong feeling that they were important. There are a whole bunch of other recommendations you don't see here. If you read the detailed report, you'll see reference to them. Ones that we felt were exceedingly important, but we didn't think we knew quite how to implement, or we didn't think that we understood them well enough. So we have the ones that we would rate as low priority, you're not seeing as recommendations. They didn't pass the barrier. There was a crucial one that everyone, registrars, users, ICANN staff, everyone agreed it was absolutely mandatory. It's not there because there were some implementation details that were complex enough that we decided we couldn't put it in. There's a few other ones that are similar. Mikey, and then I'll give up the floor.
I want to follow up on Jamie's point, and that is, this is Mikey O'Connor again. I co-chaired the prioritization work that followed the RAP working group, and I think we were all happy to do that. But that little tiny working group that came up with all those priorities was a little dismayed to then see the priorities get essentially rewritten by the council. And so I think this is an important discussion to have as to who's doing what and what people can expect. Because as a working group member, I'm trainable. If it turns out that I'm going to work for a year and a half on a working group and then work for another 8 weeks pretty intensively on a subsequent priority setting working group, and then the council's going to rewrite it, after a while I'm going to stop doing that. And so as we have this discussion, I think we need to be clear on sort of what the roles are and what the expectations are and where the authority lies for these things. And if you want to delegate it to the working groups, that's fine, but then delegate it. Don't delegate it and then undelegate it, because it makes for sort of duplicate effort from over-committed curmudgeon emeritus volunteer types like me. Thanks.
I'll go to Mason and try and close this off so we have 5 minutes for coffee.
All right, I'll be brief. Mason Cole speaking, chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. Just to follow up on Jamie's comment, which I think is valid, I'm aware of an analysis that staff has done on its own prioritization issues. Staff is working at overcapacity. I think it's fair to say that many in the community are working at overcapacity. I will agree with Alan that I think this work group has done a great deal of good work in analyzing the situation as it exists and making some recommendations that are probably implementable, if that's a word. One of the objections or concerns I've had in this work group is lack of quantification of a problem in order to be solved. I think if the ICANN community is going to accept the workload that it has, problems addressed in a work group need to be carefully quantified in order to understand whether or not they truly exist. As an operational registrar, I could make a pretty good argument that the incidences of accidental loss of a domain name are disproportionately small to the effort put into this work group. I think the community needs to take care with documenting facts in a fact-based policy development process before it embarks on policy development.
I'm going to cut it off here. Sorry, I do want people to give some break time to people. We're scheduled to start again at 10:30, meeting with Patrick Fulstrom, who's the new SSAC chair, and I recommend being there for that, because we do need to understand other groups, and I think Peter has a lot of interesting things to say about the ASAC's work. So we'll meet here again in roughly 15 minutes at 10:30. Thank you very much.